Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 2:28 p.m. It's Monday, March 2nd, 2020. Before we begin, I want to thank Jordan May, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Brett from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Ledoux, Representative Shaw, my vice chair, Representative Kopp, and myself, Representative Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is House Bill 198, Aggravating Factors at Sentencing, sponsored by Representative Josephson and Representative Knopp. This is the first hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee. Here to introduce the bill is Representative Josephson and Representative Knopp. If you could both please come forward, identify yourselves for the record, and then you may begin your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andy Josephson. I represent House District 17.
And Representative Gary Knopf representing House District 2.
And I'd recognize that Representative Stutz has also joined us.
Mr. Chairman, I'll start with some comments about why we're here. Representative Knopf will then talk to you about why we're here as well in a more sort of focused way in terms of what happened around December 9th in Sterling, just north of Soldotna. And then my staff has a PowerPoint for you. So the first thing I want to tell the committee, and I thank you for hearing the bill, is that this bill is not, it's not a civil rights bill. It's a crime bill. And I want the committee to pay attention to that and sort of remember that. What this bill does...
Just a moment. Representative Drummond has also joined us. Please continue.
Thank you. What this bill does is it says that if a group of Alaskans who identify as homosexual, that is, they're gay or lesbian persons, or they have a gender identity issue... I don't mean an issue, but they express that differently than, say, the majority, that they, if they are deliberately attacked by an assailant because of those characteristics, the assailant could be subject to enhanced penalties. That's the bill. Now, some may say, well, this bill sounds radical, but I'm here to tell you the bill is not radical. The bill is, there are variations of this bill in 32 of the 50 states, including six very conservative states like Nebraska and Kansas. So it is the vast majority, I guess one would say, of the states that have this sort of hate crime. First, let's talk about hate crimes broadly. Hate crimes have existed since really the late 70s, early 80s. So if you're asking, well, you know, I'm not crazy about the hate crimes themselves, 45 states have hate crimes. So that is just a typical state. And 32, as I said, of those 45 also have an enhanced penalty that's called a bias-motivated aggravator or aggravator if someone is targeted because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. That's the nature of the bill. The bill will rarely be needed, but when it's needed, it's really needed. Otherwise, you're left with community outrage. And this is something that Justice Rehnquist, a very, very conservative justice, originally appointed by Richard Nixon to be an associate justice and advanced to the chief justiceship, if that's the word, by Ronald Reagan, declared was constitutional in 1993 in a case called Wisconsin versus Mitchell. And in that decision, he expressed concern with the idea that if people are attacked for a characteristic inherent in them, that the response of the community could be one that would likely provoke retaliatory crimes, inflict distinct emotional harms on their victims, and incite community unrest. Now, here's what he's talking about. In the 1993 decision, where he said, notwithstanding the Wisconsin Supreme Court's beliefs, which he reversed, that hate crimes were lawful, what had happened was some African-American men in Wisconsin had deliberately attacked a white man because he was white. And Wisconsin said, we're going to punish that more severely because it's a race-based crime. And the legislature, our essentially equivalent in Madison, Wisconsin, said, we're going to punish that more severely. The Wisconsin Supreme Court said, that's unlawful. And then in comes Rehnquist, and he says, you're wrong, it's lawful. And he said that those kinds of crimes could result in the provocation of retaliatory crimes. So you could have almost like racial crimes or racial infighting. They would inflict distinct emotional harm. What was he talking about there? He was saying if there's a crime that is not with a specifically targeted population, you know, Polish Americans, African Americans, that sort of thing, then we all are subject to that crime. We're all in that pool together. And so there's no greater harm to any one segment of the society. But if you inflict a crime with the intent to harm a certain group, then the only way to protect that group is through a statement of community condemnation. Now, the other thing is, I think some people view this bill and they say, well, there's something unfair about the bill because I'm in a majority population. For example, I'm a white male, and therefore I don't get this, quote, benefit. But my reaction to that would be, this is not something to begrudge. Because, first of all, no one gets the benefit except the community gets the benefit writ large. It's not something to begrudge because the victim was either probably assaulted feloniously, so not just slapped, but really done damage to, or murdered, right? So you don't want to be in this category of people getting this so-called benefit. It's not a place to be. Something went horribly wrong if you did enter that category. So this is about community condemnation, and we already have this. We already have 37 aggravators. This adds a clause, sexual orientation, gender identity, to the 22nd aggravator, which is about race, religion, creed, nationality. So it fits logically in that group. Just a couple other comments. This cannot, I promise you, this cannot be abused by the prosecutor. Why? Because in the current law, you have to have a finding beyond a reasonable doubt that the aggravator should apply, and that finding must be made by all 12 jurors who just found the defendant guilty. So it's at sentencing. And then in addition, the judge is the final backstop. The judge could say, you know, you proved the aggravator, Mr. Prosecutor, but it didn't really move my needle, and I'm not going to enhance the sentence. So those are the main things I want you to know. The other couple things I'll let you know, and Representative Knopf will talk about this, is that Kenai and Soldotna, those most closely connected to this incident, which he'll describe, their city councils overwhelmingly, I think votes of 5-2, supported this bill. This is the remedy those city councils want. The Anchorage municipality last week, by a vote of 11-0, support this bill. Now, they never really took a vote, but they didn't take it off the consent agenda. The effect is 11 members, as you know, Mr. Chairman, said this is the bill to help solve this problem. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions and respond to any concerns.
I don't see any questions. Representative Knopf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, as Rep. Josephson, Rep. Gary Knopf, District 30, for the record, Mr. Chairman, and as always, thank you, thank the committee for hearing the bill. So, there's nobody better than Rep. Josephson to get into the details, legalities of this issue. I'm here specifically because this issue that prompted this thing happened in my hometown, and And so, as you may or may not know, Rep. Joseph just mentioned it, my borough, both my cities passed resolutions in support pretty overwhelmingly. Two cities, one borough assembly passed resolution support for this. So, but I want to go back to what got me into this is the fact that it happened in my community. I was well aware of it through the media, the news reports. And then they supporters of the LGBT community put together a town hall to address this, talk about it. And so I attended that, and I got an invite to attend one of the 10. So I attended, expecting 25 to 30 people, and we had roughly 200 people at that small community library, supporters of the LGBT community, and some of the members of the LGBT community. So their request was for to bring this hate crime legislation forward. You know, it's a fair and reasonable request, and I've been asked, are we creating a new class of people by supporting these people? I say, absolutely not. We're extending fair and equal treatment to all classes of people, regardless of who they are, what they believe in, how they live their lives, you know. I mean, and so I want to say, Mr. Chairman, that I'm kind of honored to sit here in front of this committee, because we have two members who were in law enforcement most of their careers and who fought for equality, you know, all the time, as we also have in this room three licensed attorneys who practice a lot. And not always did you guys support your clients, but you always supported fair and equal representation, whether you believed in their innocence or guilt, you know. And that's what we do as legislators, try to expand that same equality. Some people, you know, can't get over their religious beliefs and have a dislike for the LGBT community. Again, we're not asking you to like the LGBT community. We're asking you to extend the same equal treatment that we would to all members of society. And as Rep. Josephson mentioned, the hurdles for applying these aggravators are enormous, as I read through the statutes myself. So, you know, and when I talk about the separate class of people that people say you're creating a special class of people these aggregators apply to, I would argue, if you took for example creed, your religious beliefs, you know, we don't allow discrimination based on your religious beliefs now, or hate crimes, you know, without additional penalties. So but would that same thing apply if you had a group of atheists, say you had a group of atheists who didn't have religious beliefs but were targeted? Would we include them? Would they be included? So the point of that analogy is we could see a series of this stuff come forward in the future. But if our job as legislators to make sure that people are treated equally across the spectrum, regardless of how they live their lives, this is the appropriate legislation to move. And this is, I suspect in the future, Mr. Chairman, we will see more and more of these types of issues. And so I'm really comfortable with moving this. I really think it's the right thing to do, showing no special treatment. In the case that happened in Soldotna, so I think what really sealed the deal for me was it was clearly in my mind a targeted hate crime. I mean, first, a homophobic note. Secondly, the smashed windshield, the damage to the vehicle. And third was the knife attack, which cut the woman up pretty severely and spent many days in the hospital. And I'm sure you've all seen the photos of the work on her arms, the stitches. Pretty horrific crime, to be honest with you. And so when you have an individual that is that full of hatred, I mean, it could have just as well been a murder right there, you know. And that's the type of things we're trying to prevent, and want to make it very clear that the consequences are pretty severe when it's clearly targeted like that. So I guess I'll leave it at that and answer any questions if I can on that. So thank you.
Again, I don't see any questions from the committee. You had a slide, a PowerPoint from your staff?
Yes.
And I would just note, I'm somewhat cognizant of the time. We were going to do our best to stop probably at 3 o'clock for those that were here to hear House Bill 148. I think the likelihood we will not get to House Bill 148 today.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, real briefly, the question didn't arise, but in the event the question were to arise about, well, aren't there federal laws that would offer some solace or comfort to these victims? The answer is mostly no. You need what's called a federal nexus, NEXUS, You need some connection to federal jurisdiction. So the event that Representative Knopp discussed occurred at the garage door of this woman late at night. And the defendant did not come to burglarize her home. And he didn't come to steal from her. He really cut her and cut her badly from the wrist to the elbow, both arms. And she was, her arms were wide open. I mean, this was a serious felony, a assault kind of thing. Thank you.
I would note for the committee, we do have the victim of that crime is actually available and will be testifying later today. But go ahead.
All right, for the record, my name is Nathaniel Grabman, staff to Representative Josephson. Chair Klayman, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to present today. As representatives Josephson and Knopp just went over a good amount of this, some of this presentation may be somewhat redundant, but I'll try to get through this as quickly as possible, and hopefully it's somewhat edifying. All right. So aggravating factors at sentencing, the main point here for me is that these don't come into play until after a defendant has been convicted of a crime. As mentioned before, AS 1255-155C contains 37 separate factors which can be considered at sentencing and first must be proven. If they are, then it allows for sentencing beyond the presumptive ranges set out in law. There's also AS 1255-125D, which contains mitigating factors. The combination of those mitigating factors and aggravating factors can cause sentences to be above or below the presumptive ranges in those cases. Basically, why do we have these? The quick version is that motive and details are important, and we can often talk about things in black and white context, but there's often far more shades of gray between those extremes. These laws and all laws are ultimately reflections of societal attitudes about right and wrong. When these aggravators come into relevance, the defendant's already been convicted and the details are broadly considered particularly abhorrent or aberrant from what we might consider a typical crime of that sort. This particular bill, HB 198, would amend aggravator number 22. As mentioned before, that aggravator comes into play when the victim is targeted specifically because of their race, sex, color, creed, physical or mental disability, ancestry, or national origin. This bill would add the five words sexual orientation or gender identity to that list. This slide is takes some of the data from the FBI's Uniform Crime Reporting program for the last few years. It on the left-hand side, we have a graph of crimes that have been reported to the FBI, which were motivated by bias against an individual because of their sexual orientation. You can see that it's gone up roughly 15% from 2015 to 2018, which is the most recent year for which we have data. On the right side, we have crimes that were motivated by bias against somebody because of their gender identity. It was relatively flat for several years, and then we had a roughly 30% spike in 2018. We also have a few minute long video that we're going to show right at the end of this, which will make the argument that these crimes are vastly underreported. So, now, that being said, this is national data. As we will likely hear from Tammy Willis in a few minutes, this is not something that Alaska has been immune to. The events on the Kenai Peninsula occurred over the span of just a few weeks in late November and early December and kind of prompted this bill into existence. Finally, we have a map here of which states have these sorts of aggravator laws on their books. One thing that I found interesting is that depending on how you argue it, there are either four or five states that don't even have these aggravators. And then the majority have aggravators related to either sexual orientation or gender identity. So, and we are one that does not. With that,
just a quick question. How long is the video?
It is about 3 minutes long.
Okay. You can proceed.
Thank you.
becomes mass shootings with hate-filled manifestos, attacks on houses of worship, and assaults on individuals because of their race, religion, disability, or sexual orientation. More and more hate crimes are making headlines, but hate crime statistics are at best wholly inaccurate. Experts say the numbers are significantly higher than the ones reported by the FBI.
We do not have the slightest idea how many hate crimes there are in America, and we have never known. The numbers currently kept by the FBI are largely useless.
A hate crime is defined as a criminal offense motivated by bias or prejudice. Now, hate itself is not a crime, and hate speech is protected by the First Amendment. The term hate crime only came into common use in the 1980s, but those kinds of crimes, of course, existed long before we used this official label for them. Laws to protect against what we now call hate crimes didn't come around until the 1960s. Propelled by the Civil Rights Movement, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 paved the way for the first federal hate crime legislation in 1968. It was the Hate Crimes Prevention Act of 2009 that added federal protections against crimes committed on the basis of gender, disability, and sexual orientation. As far as tracking hate crimes, the FBI didn't even begin doing that until the 1990s, following the passage of the Hate Crime Statistics Act of 1990.
Hate crimes cannot be tolerated in a free society.
When we try to understand just how many of these crimes are being committed, we see that the data is incomplete for a lot of reasons. The Department of Justice notes most hate crimes themselves are not reported to law enforcement. Victims are sometimes afraid to report these types of crimes, in part because of historical mistrust between law enforcement and members of some minority groups. And for the crimes that are reported, it can be challenging to prove an offender's intent. On top of that, the very definition of what a hate crime is varies from state to state. And while there are hate crime laws at the federal level, several states don't have their own. Federal law does not mandate that states report hate crime numbers to the FBI. Now, all of these factors likely result in the massive underreporting of hate crime numbers.
It's one of the things we have to do is get a better handle on the actual level of this, where it is, and so forth, and how to
get analysts say better training at the local level, along with requirements for police departments to track and report hate crimes, could vastly improve the data and provide a clearer picture of the problem.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Hearing, seeing none, I'm actually then going to go ahead and open up invited and public testimony on House Bill 198. And I would note that if you're on the phone, please make sure you are not on a speakerphone, as the sound quality is not as clear and it's often difficult to hear what you're saying. I'm going to start with invited testimony with Tammy Willis. Ms. Willis, are you on the line?
In Anchorage at the LOI office.
Yes, go ahead and proceed. We try to limit testimony to about 2 minutes, but I'll probably give you a little extra time if you need it. Go ahead.
Thank you. On November 14th, I found a note on my truck. It was full of homophobic slurs and a threat saying that I will be hurt. On November 22nd, an object was thrown at my truck, shattering my windshield. I later learned from the Sedalton police that they found a rock with the word dyke written on it at the location where this happened. On December 9th, things escalated to include an assault in my home where I was repeatedly cut with a knife and punched until almost the entire left side of my body was covered in bruises. It took 20 staples and 2 stitches to put me back together and almost a month for the bruises to disappear. Still, I was lucky that morning because the power outage made it difficult for my assailant to see me. Otherwise, the outcome would have been, without a doubt, much worse for me. Since the assault, I have left my home in Sterling and moved into the residence hall at Kenai Peninsula College where I work. I rarely go out anymore, and when I do go, it's for very short trips and usually in the company of a friend. I don't sleep well, I have panic attacks in the dark, and I still wake my wife up with nightmares. Since coming forward with my experience, I've also learned the hard way why people often don't come forward with their stories. The outpouring of hatred seen on social media since my coming forward cuts deep, just like the knife did. With every news story, every time I testify, every time I take a stand against what happened, there's a new outpouring of hate rhetoric and attempts to dismiss my experiences altogether. At the same time, there's been an outpouring of support from people all over Alaska and from here in the community where I was hurt. The support was most clearly demonstrated on January 4th when 200 people showed up at a town hall to discuss the safety of the LGBTQ community. Religious leaders, community leaders, state leaders, and a room packed full of community members showed up and showed me that there were more people willing to take a stand against hate than I ever could imagine. They came, they listened with their hearts open as members of the LGBTQ community and their allies shared their stories of bullying, harassment, violence, prejudice, and loss due to the issues related to sexual orientation and gender identity. As a result of listening with hearts open, people came to understand that my experience is not the exception and that the reality of LGBTQ people living in Alaska includes many of them living with fear, harassment, and threat of violence. In an ideal world where everyone was treated with respect and dignity, legislation like HB 198 would not be needed, but our world is not there yet. What happened to me was a hate crime, and I want to clarify that a hate crime is a message crime. It is meant to instill fear in the victim and in the group that the victim belongs to, and has no other purpose than to instill that fear. Until we are at a place in our world where everyone is treated with respect and dignity, HB 198 sends a clear message from our leaders that hate and violence are not the values we share as a community. They are not Alaskan values, and they will not be tolerated. I want to thank you for supporting me and listening to this, my testimony, because this is very important legislation. It means a lot to me personally as a member of the LGBTQ community, and as I have learned over the last week or so, there's over almost 1,000 people that have signed a petition in support of this legislation. Many of them are members of the LGBTQ community and their allies who have similar stories as mine. So again, I encourage you to pass this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions from the community. Thank you for taking the time to share your story. And I think I expressed the sentiment of all members of the committee that what happened to you is not acceptable in any way and, in fact, quite horrible. And I'm sorry that you suffered that. Next in the invited testimony, Karen Leffler, former U.S. Attorney for the District of Alaska. Ms. Leffler, can you hear us all right?
Yes, I can. Let me take my phone off speaker so that you don't have feedback.
Please do.
Okay. I don't want to take up a lot of the committee's time. Thank you for letting me testify. I want to emphasize under the law, the points that Representative Josephson said about why this is necessary for the state to take forward. The federal government takes a backseat to the state on hate crimes. Not only are the federal statutes require special jurisdiction, for the U.S. attorney in Alaska to take up a hate crime, they have to go to Washington and get permission because it's acknowledged that the entity and the government responsible for protecting its citizens in these areas is the state. That being said, what you're filling in is a hole that the federal government also had to fill in. In 2009, federal legislature, Congress, enacted the Matthew Shepard and James Beard Jr. Hate crime law, and that was to fill a hole. It involved two murders. One was a young man killed at the University of Wyoming because he was gay. The other individual was killed in Texas. He was a black man that was dragged behind a truck. One expanded the jurisdiction. The reason that this law was passed is because federal law, like state of Alaska law, dealt with increased punishment for race, religion, and other things, but did not address the issue of somebody who was killed solely because of their sexual orientation. It really is a situation. Courts take in motivation. The community is less safe, as the individual who was the victim of this crime noted in a way that I could never add to. That when individuals are targeted for who they are, it's not the values of our community, and it is very dangerous. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about the law, sort of how the federal law worked and why this is necessary. And that's really all I have to offer on this point. Thank you so much for letting me speak on this issue.
Thank you very much, Ms. Leveler. I don't see any questions from members of the committee. Next in the queue, I've got Charles McKee calling in, I think, from the Anchorage LIO. Mr. McKee?
Yes, I have to voice my support for this bill, but I also want to point out that I'm a whistleblower, and I'm authenticated at the federal level. So what I had researched is our founding fathers were manumission members, which is a republic. So when I authenticated myself at the federal level, as well as the state that I was born, I became part of the 1790 Act of Full Faith and Credit. And so when I blew the whistle April the 25th against the administration from doing equitable harm to 38 coastal communities, I received retaliation. And I had faxed for, sent down email, four pages, and resulting in my arrest, and consequently one misdemeanor dismissed, and I'm facing the only one, and then, but they confiscated my property and did me harm physically and emotionally and financially. And it's still resulting in that. I took it before the Alaska Mental Health Trust last Thursday, the whole package, and we'll continue to do so. My next hearing is the 16th of March. So I'm not part of the corporation. And when I point out the fact that I'm authenticated, meaning I'm not part of the corporate State of Alaska compact with the Bar Association.
Mr. McKee, you're about the two-minute mark. If you could conclude your remarks, that would be great.
Well, in conclusion, equal justice under the law, that includes the Republic registered person. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue, I don't have anybody else online, but Vicki Jo Kennedy, I believe, is here in the room. Ms. Kennedy.
Hello, my name is Vicki Jo Kennedy. I'm still here in Juneau, three sessions now. My home is Kodiak. But I'm here on behalf of some good friends of mine in the state of Florida, where I pretty much grew up. And I had my heart attack there in 2016. Yeah, politics in D.C. And they took me in. And they were one of the first legally married lesbian couples in Duval County, Florida. And I've never received so much kindness and love in my life. And I was still there, because it took me a few months, when the massacre in Orlando happened. And it devastated them, and it devastated the community. And yes, Florida had laws against it. Will it stop it in this state from happening? Probably not. But will it help in sentencing? Yes, it will. There's no doubt in my mind. It's just an amendment to an amendment, which I've only heard in politics. So I think you should endorse it. I'm in total support of it. And I feel really bad when it happened to that lady in Soldotna. Yeah, I broke down and got TV here, so I'd have to see it. But it's not saying you either support it or don't support it, you know, being gay or not being gay. It just is going to help in sentencing for people who, you know, reach hate. And I was also in D.C. when the crap hit the fan in Charlottesville. And that was really uncalled for. So it's hate is hate. And let's just add it to with everybody else, and they can be protected too. And I know I appreciate it, and I know all my LGBT friends and Q, all in our country and around the planet, would really appreciate Alaska being on board with this. And I kept my dogs in my lane. So thank you for listening to me.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 198? If you do, please come forward and state your name for the record.
Hello, my name is David Brighton from Kenai. I'm speaking on behalf of myself in favor of House Bill 198. Many people in the LGBTQ community remain anonymous out of fear. Many of our students suffer from their sexual identity, or I'm sorry, sexual orientation or gender identity, the risk of suicide is substantial for our young people. This bill doesn't solve all the problems, but it does address some of them and it helps. Please support this bill, please pass this bill, and take a stand saying that we want to protect our youth, we want to protect our LGBTQ community. I am on the planning committee for the Soldotna Pride in the Park, and when I left the last meeting, I was looking over my shoulder and I was watching to see if someone was following me. I haven't been in a situation where I've been afraid of retaliation or anything like that very often in my life. Sometimes people in this debate have said the people of the LGBTQ community are looking to be, quote, more equal. I would encourage you to consider that this is about offering more protection for a group of people that are at a higher risk of violence against them. Thank you. And thank you for allowing us to give testimony today.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions from the committee. Thank you for coming in. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to provide testimony? House Bill 198. Please come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Hi, Natalie Jones, Homer, Alaska. I'm representing myself. I'm an itinerant school counselor, and I serve a great number of schools. It broke my heart to see in Soldotna that we had students who had spoken out and not received the support from the adults in their community. And I think as legislators, you have the opportunity to set that standard of expectation of safety. And I hope that this bill gets passed so that there is a greater understanding that everyone, absolutely everyone, deserves to be safe. As my colleague just mentioned, the LGBTQ community has one of the highest rates of suicide because they live in fear, because they are marginalized. They're already in a situation where it is unequal, and asking for that equality is what we're here for, and that safety that every student and every human deserves. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to provide testimony on House Bill 198? Seeing no one else in the room and seeing no one else listed online, I'm going to close public testimony on House Bill 198. At this time, we'll hold this bill for further review. We will also adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, March 4th at 1 p.m. I would note, as I think members of the legislature are aware, that the budget will be on the floor. Whether we actually start at 1 p.m. is very much of an open question. If you are considering an amendment to House Bill 198, that amendment would be due by noon on Wednesday, March 4th. And I would note, we did not hear House Bill 148. The goal would be to hear House 148 on Wednesday if we have a meeting. But with that, we will stand adjourned for the day. It is now 3:07 p.m.